So this morning, I can tell you guys, first of all, during the week, I've heard from several people that they are trying to figure out how to Sabbath, and I think that's really cool. Ben and Jen told me, yeah, we're going to try to figure out how to Sabbath, so we're going to be gone on Sunday, actually. But no, I'm just kidding. They are gone, but that's not why. But a lot of you have been actually seriously considering, how do I Sabbath? How do I take a break? How do I rest? And I am so glad that you are doing that. We are going to continue this series this week. We were talking about rest as protest. Next week, we're going to talk about what do you do with sloth. But the whole focus of these 3 weeks is just us catching a break, us getting a little bit of rest, us taking some time to take a breath. All right. So we are going to continue that this morning. We're going to talk about rest as protest. And what I mean by that is, I'm just going to tell you from the beginning where this is coming from. I think that our culture and our society, where we live and where we've been raised and all of that, is constantly teaching us that rest is not important. And it's constantly teaching us things that's not to rest, right? That is just a constant thing in our culture. And it almost feels like taking a break, it almost feels like an act of protest. It feels like an act of rebellion to say, I'm going to take a day off, right? It feels like edgy almost, which is crazy to think about because we're just talking about taking a nap. But like that almost feels like you're pushing against the man, if you will. And so that's what we're going to kind of look at this morning, is how I think what the world tells us is important is very different than what God tells us is important. And when we start to embrace the God side of things, oh my gosh, our lives start to get a little bit more restful. All right. So this morning, our verse was Jesus talking. And Jesus essentially just says, come to me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest, right? Like, it's this simple promise. God says this numerous times in the Old and New Testament. There's this idea of, ye who are weary, give me your yoke, and I will give you rest, right? Like there is something, God says there is something about having faith in Jesus that gives us a break, something that calms us down. And that has puzzled me for a long time, because I don't get it. I didn't. I think I'm starting to get it. Not fully together yet. But it seems kind of weird, because you're like, time out. How could that help? Like, if anything, it just means I have one more thing to do on Sunday morning. Like, wait, how is this getting me rest? I can't sleep in. But I truly think the more we pursue God, the more restful we can be. And I think it's because when we pursue God, it changes our perspective, and it changes what's important to us, and it transforms our lives. All right, that is a common answer for me, just in faith, is the transformation of our lives through Jesus. But I think it's so applicable here as well. But when we start to seek God, all these other things get answered, and suddenly we can find a break. So this morning, I want to start out, I want to give you guys why this matters. And then I'm going to give you guys what I think the problem is, and then I'm going to give you guys some solutions. All right, so to start off with why this matters, we went over some of this last week, but there are a ton of statistics that tell us sleep is a problem in our lives. All right, I read an article the other day. Atlanta is actually the fourth worst city about getting a good night's rest. All right, in the entire country, Atlanta is the fourth worst. All right, you what? You're stuck on I-75 for 12 hours. You can't. You're right, Joy. He's not wrong. But we are the fourth worst at it. The CDC tell you we're supposed to get an average of 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night. I'm gonna say that again: 7 to 9 hours, not four, Levi. 7 to 9. I'm just kidding. Levi's a great sleeper. 7 to 9. We're supposed to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Less than half of adults in Atlanta get that. All right, we are under 50% getting a full night's sleep. All right, which means like half of this congregation doesn't. We're not fingers, but it's a problem that specifically our city faces, but also our country faces. Right, like these are not direct statistics, but this is something that tells me a little bit about how much of a problem we have with sleep, is that the sleep aid market is $28 billion. As a country, we spend $28 billion on sleep-related things, all right? So that could be like the fancy mattress topper or like a Ambien or something. I don't know, all that stuff, $28 billion just trying to help us sleep better, all right? we spend $5 billion on energy drink and coffee and soda to keep us awake when the sleep aids don't help, you know? Starbucks barista's like, amen. We spend $5 billion on caffeinated beverages to keep us awake throughout the day. All right, Tony's like, cheers. Yeah, you get it for free here. I don't know. We're not part of the $5 billion. That is so much money we are spending every year. Like, that's just those two categories, $33 billion, just because we can't take a dang nap. All right, like, what? This is a cultural problem we have. It's such a cultural problem, it's become almost like fun to joke about. Like, everybody has a little coffee cup that's like, but first coffee. Or like, don't talk to me till I have my morning caffeine. We all have those little catchy slogans. You know, we have the purses like, I need my coffee in the morning, whatever it is. That has become like a marker of our society, right? Like this fun, jovial, I'm slowly killing myself because I'm not getting enough sleep. Because... like I said last week, there are so many bad side effects to overworking, right? Just to not getting enough sleep, you have a higher chance of depression, a higher chance of heart disease, a higher chance of cancer, a higher chance of Alzheimer's, a higher chance of high blood pressure, a higher chance of anxiety disorders. You have a higher chance of so many things just by not getting enough rest, right? We are literally... Sorry, Sharon. We are literally killing ourselves for, I would argue, no good reason. And I think what has happened is our culture has started to tell us what to value. Our culture tells us, here are some things that are important. Here's what you need to value, and we have bought in, right? Which is not totally our fault. We have been raised all of our lives learning these are some things that we value, right? But... if we took a step back and said, no, I'm not going to buy into that, I'm going to listen to the Bible instead, I think that would help a lot of this out. All right, so what do I mean? The first example I have for you is, I think culture is constantly telling us that we are the most important thing. All right, it's constantly telling us first. All right, I have some people like, yep, and some other people like, what? No, not me. Culture's constantly telling us that it's all about us, all right, in a good way and a bad way, that everything should serve us, but that also we are the only ones that can do whatever, right? Like, you want to get ahead, you got to work harder. You know, like, you want to be some all-star and fill these other things we'll talk about later, then, like, it's all up to you. You've got to push yourself and strive. Made men, and like, our heroes are these people that have like catapulted themselves to these great places, right? It's all about us, and we get caught up in that, and we get convinced that everything is up to us. We get convinced that everything should be helping us and that we are the only things that matter, and then that consumes our lives. Right? Suddenly, it's like, no, I have to work 80 hours a week because, like, I have to get that promotion. I have to work 80 hours a week because no one else can do this job. I'm the only one that can. Right? We convince ourselves of that, and we're like, no, the consequences don't matter because, like, I'm bettering myself, whatever that means. I'm bettering myself. Right? And we become so, so self-focused that we lose sight of when Jesus says things like, he who is first is last. Or when Jesus does things like recruit a bunch of disciples and then tell them, now you go do the ministry because it's not just about me. Or like when Paul talks about a body of Christ that is all working together and that one individual piece is not the most important piece. We forget all these little lessons because we get so focused on saying, no, it's all about me. I am all that matters. Right? And so we run ourselves thin trying to be this, conquer the world. And like, no, that is not at all what we need to do. We have to be able to take a step back and say, wait, maybe it's okay to rely on other people. Maybe it's even okay that other people are better than me. It's okay. There's a guy that he said a quote once. He said, he's a pastor, so he's speaking from a pastor's perspective, but he said, the reason why pastors never take a Sunday off is not because they're afraid the church is going to fall apart. It's because they're afraid the church is not going to fall apart, right? Because we get our identity thinking everything relies on me, and if suddenly we realized, oh, wait, the world will survive without me, then our world crumbles. We're like, what is my purpose if everything doesn't solely depend on me? Right? So our first lesson is we have to be able to take a step back and start relying on other people. We have to start bringing other people into the mix. All right? And this is a really, really hard thing to do because sometimes other people let you down. Right? Like, it's just the truth. You're going to get burned by this. But it's so important to do. I'll give you guys a simple example. Right? This is like a low-cost example. I have been building Cecilia one time. She got really angsty. It was over spring break this last time. And she was like, I want a new porch. And so she just tore out our porch. Right? Point of contention for me because I was like, who's going to put that porch back, Cecilia? But she tore out our porch. And so slowly over the end of the semester, we were building this porch back, right? We were putting in pieces. We had gotten to the point where everything but the railing was back in. You know, so like there's steps and there's posts and then there's this railing that goes up. Everything but the railing had been put in. And I, for the life of me, could not figure out how to do it because it requires an angle cut. And I did not know how to cut an angle with a circular saw, all right? Some of you are like, well, you're dumb. I know how to do that. All right, leave me alone. I'm learning. All right, so I could not do this thing. And I spent weeks, like, just, like, lost, right? I just spent weeks. And, like, Cecilia was frustrating me because she'd be like, when's our porch going to get ready? And I was like, why'd you tear it out? It was just this constant frustration and anxiety for, like, a good month. And then one time, offhandedly, I was hanging out with Ben, and I was like, Ben and Jen, you know, they're both like literal professional carpenters, basically. And I was like, hey, Ben, you're like good with wood. How do I cut an angle with a circular saw? And he's like, I'm free this Friday. You want to, like, let's do this thing. And I was like, okay. And so he came over to my house, right? He came over to my house. He brought the right tool. He brought like a good saw. And in, like, 3 seconds, he'd showed me how to, like, use a little thing to figure out the angle and then all the number science stuff. He was able to teach me that so fast. And so the thing I had been stressed about for a month, by just allowing someone else to help me just a little bit, of almost no cost to him whatsoever, it was all fixed. It was this beautiful, anxiety-free, and now we have a railing, and Cecilia's not always asking me when, and we can move on from the fact that she tore out the porch. Like, it was a good thing, and it was, in front of her we can, all right, it was only possible because I was willing to admit I don't know how to do everything, right? I was willing to admit this isn't all about me. It's okay to ask for help, right? When we forget what society tells us and we listen to what the Bible tells us, we can start to relieve our worry and our anxiety and our stress and get a little bit more rest when we're willing to rely on other people. That is the whole point of this church, is that we get to rely on each other and share burdens. All right. Another example is, I think, and this is a big one, I think society is constantly telling us that it is okay to be worried. Right? Like, we are constantly being pushed to worry. And the reason why we are constantly being pushed to worry is because if you're worried, you're willing to buy something. Right? So people are constantly telling us, hey, you should get scared because you never know when mayhem's going to strike. Buy our insurance. You know, like, hey, your life is crazy right now. You should be totally terrified. Buy this product. Right? Like, we're constantly being fed the narrative that we need to be worried about everything all the time, constantly. There's so much anxiety in the world, right? And there's so much what if. We're being trained to ask the question, what if? And in some ways, that's a good thing. Right? Like, sometimes I don't ask the question what if, like, too much. Sometimes Cecilia's like, William, hang on, we should consider some consequences here. But we are constantly being pushed to worry, right? Constantly. And what happens is we try to answer, this is a William theory, this is not a Bible theory, but we try to answer that worry. We get so worried, we try to get our security by buying stuff, right? Like, materialism is our answer to worry. Right? So we're like, oh, I'm super worried that I'm going to get fired. I'm going to go out and buy this stuff and it'll help somehow. I don't know. We try to get our security from stuff, and then that never actually gives us security because it's just stuff, right? And then Andrew says, and then it burns down and where's your security, you know? Know that this is a problem because, so Sharon mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but this is something that just I don't know how to handle. And that is, I know this is a problem because of the storage unit industry. All right, now I'm not going to tell you that storage units are inherently bad, or if you have one, that that's like a terrible thing. There are perfectly good reasons for having a storage unit. That is okay. But we spend $97 billion a year in this country on storage units, period. We've dedicated $4 billion of square footage to storage units, right? So we spend, on average, $97 a month to climate control that couch we're never going to put in our house. We spend, on average, $97 a month to climate control that couch that's never going to be in our house while the person's dying of heat stroke on the corner, right? Like, what were the priorities of our world? That we care more about the things we haven't seen in 10 years than actual human lives, right? $97 billion. Think what that can cure. Think what that can fix, right? But we are so consumed with needing stuff. And we're so consumed with materialism and having to buy things and getting security from things, we can't let go of anything, right? And then what happens is that causes more worry. Because then we're like, oh man, my stuff, what if I lose my stuff? What if there is a fire? What if there's a, and so then we get consumed in the worry of that. Or we get consumed with needing more stuff, right? Because it's never going to be enough. So it's this thing that just keeps feeding the worry. And it just overwhelms us, and it takes us down, and then we can't function because we're so consumed with consuming, right? That is what society tells us, but what does Jesus tell us? Jesus, in Matthew 6, one of the most beautiful passages in the entire Bible, Jesus tells us, do not worry about anything, for who by worrying adds power to your life? Jesus says, why are you worried? Like, look, the birds don't worry. The fish don't worry. Why are you worried? God loves you so, so much, but you're so, so worried all the time. All right? And then Jesus says, he goes through this whole list, and then he says, this is probably one of the verses that guides my theology more than anything else. He says, seek first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be given to you. Right? Seek God first, and you'll have everything you need. Because that is the answer. That is where our security comes from, is from God. Right? It's not from stuff. It's not from insurance. It's not from faith. It's not from a place in society. It's from God. And so just like we need to start relying on other people, we need to learn how to rely on God. We need to learn how to turn things over to God. We need to learn how to trust God. And it's turn things over to God, not so that God will do what we want, but turn things over to God and say, all right, God, this is yours now. Go. Right? We need to let things go. And we need to allow God to have control, right? That is the answer to worry, is seek God first, not whatever else society tells us, all right? Another example for you, and this one I think is huge. This one I think is a very pervasive thing, is our culture is built on jealousy, all right? It is built on wanting what everyone else has. I actually had a conversation with this about this with someone this morning, and they were talking about, it's just crazy, you run yourself ragged trying to be someone else, right? That's what our society constantly tells us, is to look for who, right? Keep up with the Kardashians, all right? We're strolling through Instagram, and we're like, I wish I had that. I wish I had that life. I wish I was that pretty. I wish I had that body. I wish, I wish, I wish. Where are all my hashtags? And we get so consumed and wanting what everyone else has, we stop appreciating who we are and what we have, right? Right? Society and culture tell us, because again, I think it's a money thing. They tell us, you want what this person has so that we will buy what that person has, right? It's all the buying and the wanting. But it tells us that, but God says, do not covet, right? Do not be jealous. Do not be envious. Jesus tells this whole parable about these day workers not wanting, like, don't worry about what they got, worry about what you get. Because what you get is enough, and what you have is enough, and your life is incredible, right? Your life is absolutely incredible, but you're so busy trying to compare it to someone else that you miss it, right? And the truth is, we don't even know what that other person's life actually is, right? What we do is we take 100 different people, and we take, like, I want Levi's good looks, and I want Daniel's brains, and I want Sarah's compassion, and I want Justin's awesome stare. Oh my gosh. I want all of these characteristics of all these people. Her eyes, his mouth, all this, and we make this composite zombie person that's not actually real, and that's what we seek, is this fictitious Frankenstein, it's a monster, that's going to just like, that is blatantly unrealistic, but that is what we spend our entire lives pursuing, right? And so we work ourselves ragged. We stay up at night worrying and being frustrated because we can't be this non-existent thing, right? So what we have to do is can start appreciating what we have and who we are, right? One of the most common words is about thankfulness and gratitude, right? We need to be thankful. This is a hard thing to do at the beginning, but we have to start looking at our lives and saying, oh my gosh, what do I have to be grateful for? Because there's so much, right? This morning when we were doing prayer time, someone was talking about like, it's just incredible that like I'm here. And it's just incredible that like I was able to wake up this morning and drive here. Like we have so much to be grateful for and we just miss it all. All right. So this might be a helpful thing for y'all. I remember one time I felt really convicted about gratitude. And so what I started doing is I bought a pack of thank you notes, and every day I wrote a thank you card to someone else, just like a different person, like 30 of them, I think. And by the end of it, you can't help but see all the incredible people in your lives and all the incredible blessings you have, right? And that's not even like blessings from God. That's just like, oh my gosh, there are so many incredible people in my life. How could I ever be envious of anything else, right? Because you guys are incredible. Every single one of you. Like, I know most of you pretty well. And most of you have things to be envious about, right? Most of you have make you just awesome. You just got to see it. And you got to stop trying to be that other person because you're never going to be them, but you're a really, really good you. Right? So we have to stop listening to culture when it tells us you are the most important thing. And when it tells us, hey, you should really be worried. And when it tells us, hey, what do they have? Because you should want that. We have to stop listening to those things and start listening to God. Right? And when we do that, when we seek God, and when we embody these things, and when we let our relationship with Jesus transform us so that we see the world through that lens, oh my gosh, we start actually getting a good night's sleep. We have so much less to be worried about. We have so much less to just be consumed with. We have so much less that keeps us up at night. It's like suddenly those things that were the biggest thing in the world just kind of don't matter. I remember binging The Office lately. And I just saw the episode where Angela has a baby and Dwight thinks it's his. And the entire episode, he'd been really, really mad at Jim because Jim pranked him. He comes back to the office and somebody's like, oh, hey, aren't you going to get Jim fired? And he says, no, I have a kid now. This doesn't matter. I'm so happy. Like, our perspective changes. Suddenly, what mattered just doesn't anymore. And we can get rest and we can have peace. All right, that is the key. That is how rest is protest, because it's going to look weird, right? You're like, wait, why aren't you seeking this crazy thing? Wait, why aren't you spending all your money on this? People are going to be confused, and it is going to look a little rebellious, but it is what is going to get us a break, all right? Yes? I love that. Yes. I love that. Like we said last week, 40% of Americans don't take vacation days. Take a dang vacation day. Call it well. Oh, which is a beautiful transition to our last little chunk of how do we do this, right? So we've been kind of spiritual. We've been kind of, you know, like Jesus, theological, churchy. We're going to get real practical for the next couple of minutes. We're just going to talk about some tips on how do we actually institute rest in our day-to-day life. And one of them I think is huge. Like Sarah just said, take a day off every now and again. Remind yourself that the world does not need you, that your job does not need you, that you can survive without it. Another big thing I would say, I think sleep plays a huge role in all of this, right? Getting enough sleep is just huge. And that's not something you can just like cram in on a Sabbath, right? Like that's an every night thing. And so I would encourage you guys, start setting aside times that you actually go to sleep. Have a bedtime, right? We're going to all go back to second grade. Have a bedtime. It doesn't have to be like crazy strictly enforced, but there's so much research that says if you go to bed at about the same time every day, every night, you're going to sleep so much better. And when you're planning that out, make it to where you actually have enough time to get 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Right? I have a friend who his bedtime always allows him to get 4 hours of sleep. And I'm like, well, that doesn't actually do anything because you're still tired. Like, what's the point of this? So set a bedtime and make sure you're giving yourself enough time to go to sleep. All right. And then around that, I would encourage you guys, have a distraction-free period for it, all right? Because what we do is we claim our lives with as much stuff as we possibly can, and then it's like, okay, think, 10 p.m., time to bed, boom, and we can't sleep. Well, like, no, duh. I'll tell you, so Kobe Bryant, you know, go Lakers, going to win the championship next year, Redwood. Kobe Bryant, he always said every night his bedtime, obviously this changed in season during depending on games, but every night his bedtime, at 9 p.m. he would take a shower, and then until he went to bed, he wouldn't have any technology, right? You turn off the phone, TV, and if it works for Kobe, dang it, it can work for me. But we need to do things like turn off our cell phones before we actually go to bed, you know? Don't just lay there answering emails and then expect yourself to fall asleep. Scientifically, the phone screen is the same lumens or whatever as sunlight, and so it tricks your brain into thinking you're not supposed to be sleeping. All right, so turn off the phone. All right, set aside distraction-free time before you go to bed. Right, and just be aware of what fills you up and what drains you. This is such a big one. All right, there are certain things in our lives that are going to wear us out. All right, and it's different for everybody. And there are certain things in our lives that are going to fill us up. So, like, I'll give you an example. Cleaning the house wears me out. It just drives me crazy. Really, like, detail-oriented, like, task things wear me out, right? Like, I just can't do it. But, like, being around people fills me up. Going on random adventures, like, things that I feel like are spontaneous fill me up. Something that uses my creativity fills me up. And so I know these things. And so we can be aware, and so we can say, man, I feel really tired today. I'm not going to do this stuff, and I am going to do this stuff. Right? We have to know what wears us out and what fills us up. I had a friend, she actually made 2 pots. She was very, very creative, very Pinteresty. She had like 2 flower pots, and she cut holes in one, and she wrote all the things that like drained her on that one. And so for her, it was a lot of stuff like her like phone did. And so when she was feeling extra drained, she would actually put her phone in that pot. And that was her thing of like, okay, I'm not going to do it. And then she had another thing that filled her up, and she wrote all those on there. And she had stuff in there that could help her. So like drawing was a really big thing that filled her up. So she had like little crowns and like a notepad in there. And so she actually tangibly had these buckets that she could go to. But find ways to engage what fills you up and to not do what wears you out. And you're going to have to do stuff that wears you out, all right? It just happens. But to balance that, all right? Those are some tips I have for you. But I so encourage you, figure this out this week, all right? Hopefully last week you've had the conversation about when do I Sabbath? When do I do my one big rest throughout the week? But this week, have the conversation about how can I just make my life more restful? How can I make sure I'm getting enough sleep? How can I make sure that I am not just a zombie until Sabbath, and then I like try to make it all back up. All right, figure that out, and it will make a world of difference. All right, and one of the ways to do that is by focusing on God and not by focusing on the world. All right, that is that. Let's pray.